Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 319 of the podcast. It's Saturday, 29th of April, 2017, as I record this. And can you believe it's almost May? I really can't. It's crazy. I don't know if life just speeds up as you get older, but it really is. I can't believe how fast the year is going. So we'll soon be into the sort of 6 month mark, not far away. Although I am really enjoying the spring flowers and the blossom on the tree. And I live quite near a botanical gardens in Bath, and it's just lovely to walk through there. And so very happy seasonal change. And today I have an interview with Alison Jones, and we're talking about small press publishing and selling non-fiction books. Now, Alison has over 25 years experience in traditional publishing and now runs her own imprint as well as a business book podcast. And it is so fascinating to get her perspective on how publishing has changed and her thoughts on the industry as someone with a foot in both camps. So look forward to that. And I won't be commenting anything else on publishing news this week or futurist stuff. I've been way too caught up in some other things, which I'll talk about right now. In fact, I'm just going through my notes. It has been a pretty big week, to be honest. This week we launched the first Sweet Romance book, which I have co-written with my mum. Now, if you haven't been listening to the show recently, I have been talking about this Sweet Romance, and I was going to start off just by sort of publishing it, and I didn't say who it was, and now I've kind of let it out that it's my mum. And so, you know, I want to do the best for her book. And then when I read her book, and I was like, okay, well, I can make this a lot better, which is not a nasty thing to say. It's just the reality that a first novel by anyone could use some help. So basically, I ended up co-writing it because my contribution was quite significant. And bless her, she's been so good at taking feedback. And hopefully by 5 novels in, I won't have to co-write anymore. I'll just direct and publish. But I definitely have co-written this one. Now, we were going to wait. Now, we do have two ready, and 3 and 4 almost ready. So basically, we were going to wait and put out the 3 at the same time and do the full-on launch and really focus on all that. But Mum really wanted to enter the Amazon UK storyteller competition. So I was like, okay, we can do that. So this week we have launched the book early, and it's been really weird because, of course, I haven't announced the pen name, I haven't announced the book title, and I won't be. And I've spent nearly 10 years building my author platform, and yet for this launch, I've not used any of it. We don't have an email list. We have no social media. This week, basically, I've built a website. We have, you know, set up an email sign up list, but we don't have a reader magnet. We're basically doing everything that you shouldn't do. And the reason I haven't announced it and haven't kind of tried to use my existing platform is because of what Chris Fox teaches in The Six Figure Author and Right to Market, which is that the algorithms need training and that you're better off trying to get ideal readers into the also bots and trying to sort of train that algorithm with the readers that you want, rather than, you know, if I announced it on this show, some of you might just go and check out the book and, you know, maybe you read my thrillers and maybe you buy the book to support me, and I really appreciate that. But then it puts thrillers in my also bots on the Sweet Romance and just confuses the algorithm. So definitely go and check out what Chris Fox teaches, or he was on the show last year, so you can look back at that previous episode. So we decided to keep it really pure. Haven't told people what it is, except for those few of you lovely listeners who've emailed me to get an advance review copy. So I'll come back to that in a minute. So what did we do? Well, we did a basic website, as I said, which I built according to my own tutorial, which is at thecreativepen.com/author website, which, you know, basically you can build your own website really quite fast. And that is, it's got no blog. It's just got book pages, an about page and an email list sign up. We also have gone KDP Select. So aiming for Kindle Unlimited readers. If you have, and I've said this for ages, you guys all know how much I love Kobo, but if you have less than three books in a series, or, you know, different books that are not in a series, then you might be better off in Kindle Unlimited, especially with romance, which is a sort of voracious market. So we also have gone with KDP Print. Now, partly I just wanted to try the service. If you don't know what that is, on the KDP dashboard, you can use their paperback creation as well as ebook creation now. So we still uploaded, you know, print ready PDFs, but goodness, we had to take about 6 iterations to get them right. My lovely designer is used to working with CreateSpace and Ingram Spark, and she normally her files go through straight away, but there were so many little problems with the KDP Print backend. It took us a lot more time to get that right, but now we've got it right. She knows what you have to do. But there were definitely some differences. Also, it has smaller distribution. So I wouldn't normally use KDP Print, but because of this Amazon Storyteller competition, they want you to be exclusive. So I won't be using Ingram Spark until the competition period is over, which will be end of May if we don't become finalists, or later on if we are finalists. You never know. I thought it was worth doing, although I may regret it later because it's completely turning upside down what I would have done with a launch. But hey, you know, you have to try these things. What else did we do? Okay, so then I did, obviously I've said on the podcast, please do email me if you read Sweet Romance. I would love some early reviews, and I had a few of you. Thank you so much. I would love to have some more. So if you do read Sweet Romance, please email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com. And those people are sworn to secrecy around the pen name and everything, but I would love to give some more of those out. And then we've used paid advertising because literally you have no other option. If you have no reviews, you're a brand new author, you have no email list, no nothing, you know, paid ads are the only thing you can do to get your book moving. So we've used Facebook ads in the UK because there's no Amazon ads in the UK for books, and targeted Sweet Romance authors and an age demographic because this book is aimed at a specific age group. And we've also used BookBub ads, the paid ones at the bottom of newsletters, which don't give you a big spike. They're more like a trickle, but they do have a list of UK specific readers. So trying that as well. And again, yeah, we're spending money on the UK launch because of this competition, because the first round is based on sales. Sales and reviews as opposed to book quality. Now, I think this is a good book. And I'm not embarrassed about the name or the title or doing this. It's just that I want to keep those algorithms quite clean for now. I will no doubt announce it at some point once we've got it going. But it's also quite an interesting experiment for me on what it's like to be a new author all over again, and kind of feeling like, oh, well, I can't do that because I don't have an email list. I can't do that because I don't have a podcast or anything to get, you know, and the sales are quite disappointing with a new book. So I hope that encourages some of you who might be at the beginning of your journey, that you can get a book moving with, you know, if you don't have anything at all in terms of platform. But I am looking forward to getting 3 books out there and then giving it another go with the sort of launch mechanism that I would usually use around, you know, what that I would recommend for new authors. So that's good. I've also been, I also got out How to Market a Book this week. I've been putting off the 3rd edition for 3 years, I think. So How to Market a Book, the last edition was out, I think, 2014. And I want to get another edition up, so the 3rd edition. And as I just took the print book this week to the cafe and I went through it and scribbled on it. And basically, I think the third edition I'm going to publish as a completely new book instead of uploading a new file, because it's actually quite different. And if I upload a new book and overwrite the old one, it means previous readers won't be able to buy it again on Kindle, whereas actually a lot's changed. So I'm going to... That should be out by the end of May or beginning of June, because I'm getting the book, How to Market a Book, done as audiobook, because my nonfiction audio is going a lot better than my fiction audio. So I'm going to get more of my nonfiction up there. So you can expect How to Market a Book, the third edition, hopefully end of May, June. And then, because it's kind of been a crazy time, yesterday I fell apart. I woke up and I was like, oh, I just don't feel very well. Maybe I'm ill. And I went for a little walk and I could barely move. I could sort of dragging my legs along. And I came back home and I said to Jonathan, I think I might be coming down with something. I'm just not feeling well. And he looked at me and he went, I think you might be tired. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm tired. This is what being really tired feels like. So I went to bed and slept for like 12 hours. And that's what happens when you write and launch a book in March and then do the same again in April. So I don't, you know, those people who do a book a month, I don't know how you can manage it. I won't be doing it again, but I'm going to do How to Market a Book in May. But hey, you know, I love my work. I love my job. I love what I do. But yes, very important. Don't be like me. Look after yourself. Don't hit the wall. So yeah, that's kind of a personal update, but also hopefully some help with your publishing stuff and also book marketing stuff. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments in the last week. Mary Schaefer says, I really love listening to you when I'm driving around, turning otherwise wasted time. I live in a rural area, which means a lot of driving, into something of a masterclass in indie publishing. Thank you, Mary. And thanks also for increasing your Patreon pledge, which I really appreciate. Tenzin YW says, currently binging the backlist while visiting the Donkey Sanctuary in Devon, and so far managed over 200 shows. Great podcast. And that he tweeted me that earlier on in the week, and then later on in the week says, enjoyed the 300th podcast. I needed that positive outlook you inspire. Thank you. Here's a picture from Bhutan. So I love that. I love that Tenzin has actually managed nearly 100 podcasts in a week. That's completely crazy. But thank you so much. And I haven't re-listened to any of my podcasts. So it's quite funny that some of you might be experiencing what my life was like 5 years ago, and I've completely forgotten it. So yeah, podcasting is weird in that way. Marie Madigan says, found J. Daniel Sawyer's excellent podcast, the everydaynovelist.com, via the last show. Craft, business, rights, mindset, the works. Yes, and Dan runs, you can find that at everydaynovelist.com if you're looking for a new podcast to listen to. Travis Bach says, been getting caught up on my industry news. The show has been a goldmine lately, really blowing my mind with new options. Thank you, Travis. And no doubt I'll be back with industry stuff next week. I think this show has a lot of industry stuff because of what Alison and I talk about. Melissa Beckwith. Oh, Melissa sent me a lovely picture of her reading The Successful Author Mindset on the beach, doing some educational reading on vacation on Pensacola Beach, Florida. Really lovely picture. I loved that. And also really excited to see The Successful Author Mindset on Anna McNuff, who has just cycled along the Andes, the largest mountain range in the world. Anna is an adventurer and included the book in her 6-month reading list, books that kept her sane on the road. Thank you. And you can find that at annamcnuff.com. And if you like traveling, Anna is one of those amazing adventurers. And, you know, I love looking at her stuff, and I'm looking, and she's going to come on the show and talk about her book later on this year. But really, I just love seeing that a book I wrote kind of, you know, in my study was read on the Andes. That's awesome. And finally, Lee Tucker says, catching up on the podcast has been encouraging, helped me through my writing funk. And yeah, sometimes we all get a little bit down. It, you know, nobody said writing was easy. It's one of those simple and yet not easy things. And Yeah, but it's well worth it, isn't it? I mean, I guess part of the reason I do drive myself into the ground sometime is because I do love this. And I'm constantly thinking of, what do I want to build? What do I want to create in the world? And how do I want to help people? Like, how to market a book? I really was wondering whether or not to do another edition. And then I realized that I've learned so much since the last time I wrote it, and that it would help you guys if I write it. And sure, it will make me a bit of money, but mainly, I want to write that because it helps me to put it down. It helps you to put it down. And, you know, we write because of these reasons. We want to help people. We want to share our life. We want to inspire people, encourage people, give them a good story, help them escape their life, all of these reasons. So yeah, sometimes it's hard, but hey, what else do you want to do with your life? Okay, so today's show is sponsored by my own audiobooks. In fact, if you would like The Successful Author Mindset in your ears, you can get it on audible.com and .co.uk and all the other Audible sites. And it's also on iTunes and my own website. And you can also get How to Make a Living with Your Writing and Business for Authors. So they're all available through the creativepen.com as well as the Audible various audio stores. I narrated Business for Authors, but the other two are narrated by wonderful Caroline, whose voice is quite similar to mine. So you'll get that. But you can hear my voice in inverted commas through the writing. So if you need some more inspirational audio that gives you actionable tips to make more money with your books and stay sane while doing it, check them out with this month's audio credit. And the books are also available in ebook, print, and workbook formats. Okay, so this kind of sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon, and thank you especially to new patrons. It's hard because I always say Patreon like Patreon, and then I say patrons. So anyway, thanks to Chloe Adler, Marie Manthi, I think it is, Lilith Black, Jin Holen, Ken Ramoella, Kendra Temples, Mason Saber, Don King. Thank you to all of you. And thank you to everyone who supports the show on Patreon. I really, really appreciate it. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. Plus, if you are a Patreon supporter, you get an extra audio every month, Q&A show, which I'll be recording in the next couple of weeks for May. And you can support me with just a couple of dollars a month. So a coffee or two a month, and you'll get that extra show. Patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here with Alison Jones. Hi, Alison.
Hello, Joanna. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's so good to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Alison is a business author, publisher, and consultant, and has worked in the publishing industry for 25 years, both with traditional publishers and as an independent. She now runs the Practical Inspiration Publishing imprint and the Extraordinary Business Book Club podcast, which is awesome. Now, Alison, you've been in publishing a while.
I'm very old.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting you're old at all, but it's great to have you on the show because of your experience in the industry. And I wondered if you could tell us a bit more about your journey while also kind of discussing how the changes in publishing have impacted your journey.
I suppose my journey is the development of publishing over the last 25 years in microcosm. So exactly. That makes all kinds of sense. Yeah. So when I started in publishing, it wasn't as a publisher. I started as an author. Hmm. It was one of those bizarre things. I went to talk to the people at Chambers and kind of came out with a deal to write a book for them. I'm still not quite sure how it happened, but you know, it's that kind of innate thing to say, yes, absolutely. When someone says, can you do this? And then go away and figure out how to do it afterwards. So I actually started by writing a Saints dictionary for Chambers Harrow, which was fascinating, actually. Loads of really good material if I ever do write a novel. And to pay the way during the day, I worked at Waterstones, which was fabulous, actually, in retrospect, because, you know, I got the sharp end at both ends. I was an author, but I was also working in bookselling, and people were coming in and saying, you know, don't know what it's called, but it's got a blue cover, and they talked about it on Radio 4 last week.
and we should point out to the non-UK audience, Waterstones is one of our biggest bookstore chains.
Right.
Yeah.
And Waterstones at the east end of Princes Street in Edinburgh, which is the best Waterstones ever. So, yeah. And then I got a job in-house with Chambers, and, you know, at a very, very lowly kind of editorial assistant level. And I remember, you may know the Chambers Biographical Dictionary. One of my first jobs was photocopying obituaries from the Times, you know, in a basement. It was really kind of existential crisis time.
Wow, photocopying. Like, do people even do that anymore?
Right. And there was the printer was next to me, the printer for the entire building. And it had those, you know, the dotted lines that sort of went in, and reams of stuff would come out. So it was very, I had a computer. They made a very big deal of the fact that I was the first editorial assistant ever to have my own computer. Mm. And so I guess kind of I came in just as computers were really becoming central to the way the publishing worked. But at that point, it was still all the back end. Mm. So I was working on the Chambers Biographical Dictionary, the Chambers Dictionary Quotations I edited, and we were doing it all on computer, you know, in programs, on databases, so that you'd input the stuff and then you could search it, you could query it, you could pull up reports and cuts of the data. But as soon as it went to print, you couldn't do any of that.
Mm.
You know, you were stuck with a static arrangement of information constrained by the number of pages you could bind and the indexes that you could sort of put together.
Yeah.
So I think I realized quite quickly, hang on, this stuff, you know, you should be able to query it electronically because that's how you want to use it. You don't sit and read the dictionary quotations. You query it. You want to go in and check it. Right. So in about, I think I was at Oxford University Press at this point, and I did a diploma in computing and became, you know, at a stroke, the only person in editorial who could talk to the IT department, which made me a digital publishing guru.
Wow. And just, you know, what year was this? Because I'm just...
96, I think.
That's so funny because I was at Oxford in 97.
At Oxford University Press?
Yeah, no, at university.
Oh, university there.
And you were at the press just round the corner. Press. Beautiful. That's building, great. Isn't it?
Oh, it's gorgeous. That's beautiful. It's Copper gorgeous. Beach and wisteria. And yeah,
it is amazing. Anyway, so you were now like an expert in computers.
That's right. And that's the trick, isn't it? If you can get in at the beginning of something, then all your experience just, you know, accretes and you become actually a proper expert because you've been doing it for so long. So it was a fantastic opportunity. You know, I set up Oxford Reference Online and then I went to Macmillan and became sort of project manager working on Statesman's Yearbook and Dictionary Economics, basically taking those big reference books and putting them online. So I've got a kind of blend of editorial and computing, and I became head of digital development at Palgrave Macmillan. And then more broadly kind of moved into innovation strategy because it wasn't so much about content suddenly in the kind of about three, four years ago. It was much more about the services that linked with that. So kind of actually helping academics work more efficiently, providing tools and so on. Mm. And then at that point, Macmillan decided to move to London and I decided not to. And I set up my own company. So because I'd got an MBA a few years before that, and I was getting quite constrained and kind of irritated by constantly being on the back foot with publishing, feeling defensive, you know, feeling like you were always reacting against things and trying to protect your traditional revenue streams. And I just thought, you know, this is broken. This, you know, trying to sell content for money and that being your only source of revenue, that's rubbish. That's a rubbish business model. So that point I left and I set up Practical Inspiration Publishing, and the rest is history.
No, and the reason I don't normally go into people's history in such detail, but I'm so interested in your changes because, as you say, you've almost moved through as the industry has gone through a really radical change.
Absolutely.
And I mean, we say radical change, but you've talked about like 20 years there. So you said you got irritated and annoyed. Was that at the speed at which things weren't changing? Is that why you wanted to do it yourself?
Partly. It was also like more fundamentally just that sense that most traditional publishers, probably still now and certainly 3-4 years ago, were just really focused on protecting primarily print revenue streams because actually margins for publishers are really quite tight. You know, especially not trade publishers, you know, academic publishers and so on. The journals, not so much. Journals got quite high margins, but academic book publishers, you know, they're going along on really quite thin margins, and there's not much appetite or space for innovation when your margins are that tight. And of course, if all you can do is sell content, and that content is becoming devalued, and other people are managing the infrastructure around it. And authors actually don't really care that much. Academic authors don't care about the revenue from that. They just care about the visibility. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of putting up barriers to content and paywalls because that's how you make your money. And that's not always serving your authors well. So that sort of thing was frustrating me.
Yeah. And I'm interested just in the kind of your feelings on the broader sort of, okay, so what I've heard is that publishing is trying to recruit more technical people because yes. traditionally people have come out of university with an English degree and then have got, and you, like you said, you got an MBA later. So, you know, how is publishing really dominated by a load of people with English degrees who don't actually, aren't that interested in tech? And is the industry trying to change, do you think, and recruit new people?
Yes, and it is. I mean, you know, let's not sort of pretend it's just, they're just starting to do that and catching up. Actually, particularly academic publishing, it's been technical. Pearson, for example, became a tech company a long time ago. And, you know, Nature Publishing Group, I work very closely with as part of the Macmillan family. They've got Digital Science, which is actually a kind of family of startups. You know, they've got Altmetric and they've got some really clever tech stuff going on. And again, it's sort of supporting the infrastructure and the workflows and so on of academic publishing. So yes, and I think also in marketing, to take a different example, very, very data driven. You know, if you haven't got strong digital skills, you're going to find it really hard to get a job in publishing these days. It's a given.
Which is interesting because, of course, I mean, I get emails all the time about, oh, I just want to write, you know, as an author. I don't want to do all the other stuff. And I think authors are similar in that they're like, oh, I don't want to do the tech stuff. But, you know, I guess what you're saying is exactly the same thing. You have to. This is modern publishing, isn't it? It's actually like tech company.
It is. And, I'm sorry, guys. I wish I could just say, you just write a good book and you know, fate will find you. And it just doesn't really work like that. I don't think it ever did, but it certainly doesn't do now.
Well, exactly. I don't think it ever did. And, like, people say things like, oh, well, you know, Hemingway didn't have to do Facebook. And it's like, but there are pictures of Ernest Hemingway at his stand-up desk, like I am now, typing. He had a typewriter for letters to fans. So he, you know, which is the same as having to hang out on Facebook, right, or emailing with your fans. So,
and think about Dickens. You know, Dickens put his back into those tours. Oh. That's how he built up that reputation. You know, he really worked so hard.
Yeah, he worked super hard. But he was a man of the people. Like, you know, isn't it funny that we think he's this classic, you know, writer? He was like down in the dirt with the peeps.
Totally. Yeah. And you know, his tours were grueling.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So let's come back to your company now. So you're an independent publisher, which means you don't belong to Rupert Murdoch or any one of the big companies. And you work with a partnership model. Now, many people may have heard partnership model and, you know, in a positive or negative way. So I wondered if you could explain what partnership model means and also who it works best for and, you know, why, you know, how it can be ethical and good and not just difficult.
Sure. Actually, I do work the partnership model. I now also have a traditional publishing model as well. So I'm more of a hybrid publisher. And I think it's, I intended to be fully partner publishing. And then the kind of the editor in me got frustrated at not having enough control. So I now do both, which is really nice, actually, because it's, you know, it's a good blend. What it means is that I provide the publishing services to somebody. And it's perfectly possible, as you know, to source your entire team and to just project manage the whole thing yourself. But in a sense, I kind of do that for people. What I do that's in addition to that, that sort of makes me a bit different is, you know, I'm also a trained business coach, got the director level experience, I've got the MBA and that's it. I actually work with them to say, okay, well, if you're going to write a book for your business, that is a massive amount of your time and energy that's going to go into that. Let's just be really clear how it's going to work with the business, you know, so where's the business going? What's your broader content strategy? You know, what's your platform strategy? How are we going to make the book work with that? And then also when you've decided, you know, what book it is you're going to write and who it's for and, you know, what the scope and the structure and so on is going to be, let's find a way to write it that means it works for you right from the beginning. So, you know, it's the engine of your content strategy. You use it to build your relationships and your networks and reach out to people that you wouldn't otherwise have reached out. So there's a lot of coaching and planning involved as well as the actual publishing. And I think that's pretty distinctive. I haven't really met anybody doing anything quite like that before. And what it means to people is that they basically get the book that they want to publish for their purposes, whatever those purposes are. for a really, you know, really professionally done. Obviously, that kind of goes without saying. It's a professional publishing operation. But it's, yes, it's, I guess, the trade-off. I remember Hugh Howey. Do you remember we went to a conference, Quantum, I think it was, a couple of years back?
Yeah.
And Hugh Howey was saying on stage, look, you know, there's this whole scope of publishing options open to you. And some people like running their own business. And those are people who like to self-publish. And other people like the security of working in a big company where they don't have to worry about, you know, stationery and IT. And those are the people who like to work with the publisher. Mm. And the trade-off is control. And the upside, I suppose. So it works really well. Partnership publishing works really well for people who are doing a book as part of a bigger platform, who like and welcome the idea of control, and also who have opportunities to sell it direct. And I think that's quite important as well. You can rely on Amazon, but I don't necessarily recommend it. And I think if you have, you know, your business that you can sell the book through direct on your site, or you can take it to events where you're speaking, or you can fold it into training packages. You really want that freedom, and you want the freedom to be able to use your content however you damn well want to use it and not have to ask the publisher every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is really interesting. So I'm interested how you pick your clients, because there's only you, right? And you, so you focus on nonfiction, you focus on people who are business people. But I think it's important for people listening to realize that, you know, you have to filter out the people who it will work for, because obviously you want happy clients and clients who get there the best. And also, you, as I'm learning, there are lots of authors who are writing books that won't necessarily sell. So how do you pick your clients, and how do you know when someone has an idea that will actually make a good book as opposed to just an idea?
Oh, a great question. So how do I pick my client? You say it's just me. It is just me, but I've got a whole kind of network of people. So I've got project managers, copy editors, designers, you know, so I've got the sort of full publishing operation behind you, because you can do that now. Mm. You just source this stuff. It's amazing. So yes, it is just me, but I do, you know, I stick to what I'm really good at, which is the coaching and the strategy stuff and the editorial invention kind of, you know, right upstream. Generally, I start by working with someone on their broader business strategy and identifying their kind of the intellectual property that's distinctive to them. And I have had people melt away at this point when they realize actually they don't have anything distinctive to say. At which point I talk to them about content strategy, and I talk to them, because actually you can get your message and you articulate it by doing it, by articulating it. So we'll talk about how they might start a blog, how they might create a lead magnet ebook, further down. Also, it doesn't have to be the big thought leadership piece, and that's what I mean about finding the what you want that book to do for you. Because actually, if all you want is a lead magnet, we can do that really straightforwardly. You know, what are the things that people most often ask you? What's giving the most traction on your blog? And who are the people that you want to work with, and tailor that content? It's like that intersection between what you're really, really good at, what people are asking for, and where your industry's going. You know, let's focus on that and see what we can pull out of that. Might not be a book, might be a blog, might be a vlog, you know, might be a white paper, could be a whole range of things. But generally, it becomes pretty clear during that process if there is something that's got real substance and could be a really interesting book.
Yeah, which I think is fascinating. And you do, you do talk about book proposals on your site, and you've got a lead magnet about book proposals, which is awesome. Even if, I mean, some people listening will want to pitch a publisher. So for a nonfiction book, a book proposal is fantastic. But also people who want to go indie, I still think a proposal can be good for kind of, you know, persuading yourself that this is a good idea. So can you just, you know, maybe outline what are the main parts of a proposal that you look for, or that you consider important when people are considering their nonfiction books in particular?
Sure. Well, I think a book proposal is amazing. It's one of those tools that people don't necessarily realize just how good it is. They think of it as something quite functional. Actually, it's a lot more than that. So I'll just briefly describe the proposal challenge, just so people sort of understand what it is. I run a free Facebook challenge, which is a 10-day business book proposal challenge. And people sign up, and then in a sort of closed Facebook group with emails and videos and lots of to-ing and fro-ing and support from me and the group, over 10 days, basically, we tackle each of the fields in the proposal document, the proposal template. And if you stick it, which about half the people who sign up do, which apparently is a really good rate for this sort of stuff, by the end of it, you've got a complete, really professional, you know, book proposal. And what you do with it then is up to you. And which is great. You know, we have several people graduate from that and gone and got their book signed up with publishers. I'm publishing some of them. So that they really do sort of get traction. Quite often, though, about day four, somebody will go, oh, do you know what? This is not the right book at all. And that's great, that process. So I think what a proposal does is it forces you to make the business case for this book. And because the proposal is a document aimed at a publisher, really what it's doing is saying, can this book sell enough copies to make it economically viable? Mm. But you've always got in the back of your head as a business book author, what's the business case for me? And that's what I really encourage people to think about at the same time as well. And it's all good. I mean, there's no fluff really in a proposal. Why would a publisher put more stuff in there to read than they had to? So, you know, it's all, there's all a good reason for everything in there. I think the really key bits are the synopsis. And this is a really painful day in the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like writing a book blurb. Oh,
right. And I coach them through a kind of an iterative process to get there. But actually, if you can do that, and it does hurt, but if you can distill your book down to kind of two sentences, it gives you so much more kind of focus and clarity on it. And it means that the chances of you selling it to someone else have just massively increased, because until you're clear about it, they won't be clear about it. I remember one of the agents at the London Book Fair saying ages ago, if you can't describe your book in two sentences, you're in trouble. And I thought that was really wise. You know, it's very easy to get very precious about it, but actually, what's it about? Just tell me.
Yeah. And everyone's really just going,
No, but it's really complicated. Well, yeah, I know. And in nonfiction particularly, really, really important that you're just able to say, what is this book about? What is the single strong idea in this book, and what makes it distinctive? I think also the marketing plan is really, really important, and something that most authors, I find, haven't really thought about at all. And when you start talking people through the options and the possibilities, and when they see what other people are thinking about, suddenly, you know, from thinking, I'm going to put it on my website, you know, which is the sort of standard thing everybody says, suddenly they realize, actually, you know, all their potential, you know, the fact that they've got all these contacts, these access to gatekeepers, you know, that's all really good. And it doesn't matter whether you're publishing yourself or publishing with a big publisher, you are going to be responsible for most of the marketing of your book. So you might as well, you know, start thinking about that, because then you can fold it into the writing of your book. And that's important. What else is really important? I think competitive analysis, knowing what's out there and how you fit against it, is really important.
And even for, like, you mentioned competitive analysis there, I think for indies at that point you're also looking at the covers, because covers by genre are so important, aren't they? Like, right now business books tend to be sort of with one image and a lot of text, you know, big letters, big titles on them. So I mean, when you're doing a proposal you might not think about that, but for indies, book covers certainly is important too.
Absolutely. And then, you know, the cover isn't sort of part of your book proposal, because if it's pitching a publisher, that they'll sort of take care of that. But being really clear on, oh, that was the other one that was going to happen. You said on target market. That, you know, being really clear on your target market, the nicher the better in most cases. And that, together with what your book's really, really about and, you know, kind of the purpose behind it, that's something that's really going to have to feed into your brief for the designer for the cover.
And when you say target market, do you mean subcategory on Amazon, or do you mean some kind of demographic or psychographic?
I mean a demographic. Yeah, right. Primarily, even rather than a psychographic.
Yeah.
So for me, it might be something like, okay, so we're targeting startups in year two who are scaling up and hiring, you know, and being really clear about sort of geographical, you know, primarily we're looking at the UK, perhaps, you know, for many of my people. We're looking at this sector, perhaps, maybe this age range, although I find age is not such a helpful one.
No.
But, you know, age of a company, that matters. You know, somebody who's looking at setting up their very, very first company as a solopreneur is going to be having a very different approach to things and very different language they're going to be using and concerns they're going to have than somebody who's actually fairly well established and looking to scale up. So, that, you know, that's just one example. But I think being really clear on your, it's sort of like a target, isn't it? You know, right in the middle, you've got the person you're writing for, you know, the person you're actually visualizing in your head as your target reader. And for many of my clients, that's the person that they want to work with in future as well, because, you know, why wouldn't you write for that person? Yeah. And then there will be kind of secondary markets around that, and that's great, as long as you're focused in on that target one. So if only one person in the world could read your book, who would that be? You know, that kind of question.
No, that's super useful. And whatever genre people are writing, these questions are exactly the same, it, you know, actually is the same. So I wanted to ask you a bit more about the publishing side. Like, so you mentioned there the UK for you. And this is something that kind of annoys me, not you annoying me, is that the publishing industry not being globally focused. So as a reader, what annoys me most is when publishers put out a book in one territory and we see marketing, you know, for a book that's out in America and that hasn't come out in the UK and might not for another 6 months. So do you see, like, obviously you're publishing globally, you're publishing on Amazon and all that. So that's globally, Kobo and all the, and iBooks and everything else I have to mention every show. But do you think that there is a change around this global model? Do you think publishers are thinking beyond traditional territories, or is it still very siloed?
You know, it's so interesting. That territorial model really was only ever trade publishing. And I know that that's what many people think of when they think of publishing. But, you know, I've spent my whole life in scholarly, professional, academic publishing. Mm. And that was always global. We always had global rights to stuff. And we, you know, we sold them an Oxford University Press, Macmillan had companies, you know, we published almost agnostically out of the UK and the US particularly. The rest of the world, in a sense, was where we were looking to expand. And it's only really trade publishing that's had that kind of legacy of UK-US split in territorial rights, which always drove me nuts. I've never really quite understood it.
Oh, good. So hopefully it will be changing with digital.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes no sense at all, unless you're publishing with a small company that doesn't have the reach in, say, in the States. There are lots of UK independent publishers who just wouldn't have the reach in the States. I'd say, I mean, obviously, the people who publish with me as partners will have the rights to their book, and maybe we'll come on and talk about what that means and, you know, why it might be a good thing. But if they want to really focus on growing their market in the States, then they'd be well served to you know, I'd be partnering with somebody in the States to help promote that, or they'd be taking their content and saying, oh, I'm going to publish in the UK with you and in the US with here. So, yeah. But in big companies, certainly for trade, for academic and scholarly, it's always been global. And I think we're going to see that increasingly in trade.
Yeah. And I mean, it does seem odd to me that, you know, in a global market where you can publish globally. I mean, I understand that with the marketing reach, but we're not necessarily talking about print reach anymore, are we? And I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, how important is print to you as an independent publisher or to your clients? And, you know, are there any good things coming up with print that might be interesting to people?
It's so funny. Because I was always really an evangelist for digital publishing, I remember I had a bet with the production director at Macmillan that we'd be a 50-50 split between ebooks and print by 2015. So wasn't.
I think it probably was in romance.
Yeah, well, this is it. It's the genres, isn't it? I meant for Palgrave Macmillan.
No.
Obviously for Elsevier, you know, for big journals publishers, they passed that 50 tipping point a long time ago. But for most other publishers, digital is still more like 20-25%, you know, even at the top end, actually. I think there's publishers that are lower than that. And it's partly because ebook revenues are lower, but it's also because print has just been so much more resilient than I expected, certainly. And I think many people expected, you know, I kind of naively thought there'd be this just swap that you'd stop consuming content in print and you'd start consuming it digitally because you could. And it doesn't work like that. And I've learned actually print, it's a great technology for one thing, but the, you know, the affordances of print are very, very different. And because we live now in this kind of frictionless online world where everything's behind a screen and everything you shut down and you open up something else, that there's a sort of thingness about a print book. You can't click it away, you know. It's an actual physical object, and it carries actual physical tangible value in a way that an ebook just doesn't. And so you can gift it to people and it has a symbolic value, it has social capital in a way that digital content just doesn't. So, you know, I read ebooks all the time. You know, I wouldn't be without my Kindle. It's got so much stuff on it. But those Kindle books do not impinge on my consciousness at all until I consciously open up the library on my Kindle. Whereas my print books, you know, surround me and they have a way of being there and coming, you know, I come across them when I'm not expecting to, and they furnish my room, my life. And so, yeah, it's really different.
But how does print work in your company? Because as we know, you know, we're readers, we love books. I've got books here too. Yeah, you're talking as a reader, and I was like, yeah, I love books too. Like, yeah, print but rocks. But how about making money, Alison? How does your
when you're doing it as a business thing, that has value. So if particularly if you have a service business, it's all intangible. Whereas you give somebody a book, suddenly that's to say that that really tangible. And if the production value is good, it has to look good, it has to feel good, it has to smell good, you know, all those good things about a book. That signals something about your business. And that's, I think, where the value of print comes in. And you can send it to people with it with a little, you know, note in and stuff. So that's important. When somebody comes to hear you speak, they can take away a little bit of you. You can sign it, you know. So there's that, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I hear Joanna speak, she's amazing, and I've got a book now, look. And that sort of connection. And that's for what's coming up in print. Something that I'm doing with my authors at the moment, which is really exciting, is using print on demand to create bespoke versions of things. So I'm working with someone at the moment, we're working on a book that will be sold to HR departments. And when she works with her big clients, they will have the option of purchasing, you know, a set of books that have an introduction by their own CEO, and they have kind of a resource section at the back that has that company's specific contact information in. And you couldn't have, well, you could have done that, but it would have been expensive. You can so easily do that these days. So, you know, that's something that I'm really interested in, is creating those kind of bespoke packages that that take the book as it stands, but also allow you to customize it in some way as well. And that, I think that's happening in trade as well a little bit. You know, the Quarto experiment with cookbooks.
Yeah, and the kid, you know, your name.
And the kids stuff, the personalized stuff. The personalized stuff. Lost My Name.
Yeah, so there's, and Honoré Korda, who's been on the show and listens to the show, does this as well with her books that she gets lawyers to personalise and sells it that way as well. So, yeah, I think that's a really interesting model too. And definitely, although my revenue from book sales is still like, I think 87% ebook revenue, print is, you know, something that we've talked about with Ingram Spark and Aereo and, you know, which hopefully will be appearing more this year. Things are getting easier with print. So it doesn't have to break the bank to actually do print, does it? And I guess with the partnership model, the client pays for the print run anyway. So that's just part of your business plan, I guess.
Absolutely. And if you can make, if you as the client, as my client, can make the book part of your offering, then obviously you're getting your clients to pay for the book, which is a complete win-win, because they're getting something of real value more cheaply than they could, than people could buy in the shop. You know, you're getting paid as the author for that bespoke set of, you know, particular consignment for that client. And then obviously I supply the book, you know, with a slight markup. It's not much that I mark up. Maybe we've gone to talk about that as well. So you know, what you're creating is something that's actually really, really cost effective. I was just talking to a client the other day. We're getting a quote at the moment. She's speaking at a conference and she's been asked to supply a quote for 400 copies of the book, you know, with the sort of branding of the conference on, and they'll give a copy to all of the delegates. So the delegates go away happy.
Amazing. Yeah.
They've got something great in their goodie bag. You know, she gets to a really great bulk deal on the books. You know, it's fantastic. It's a brilliant transactional. It's a bit of currency that you can use as an author.
Well, and having just spoken in Australia and New Zealand, I included a copy of How to Make a Living with Your Writing with every talk I did. And it's the first time I've done it. And the reason being is I'm now with Ingram Spark, and it was much easier to get the books printed. And they were so much cheaper than, you know, it would have been with CreateSpace or something. So yeah, I totally agree with you on that. Now, there's so much I want to ask you, but I do want to come back to the kind of definition of an independent publisher, because the word, you know, the word independent, and, you know, indie authors have kind of co-opted this word. We're independent authors. We, you know, sort of rejecting the word self-publishing in a way, because many of us, you know, running quite big businesses now. But independent, of course, a few years back, there was a bit of kind of argy-bargy over the term, because independent publishers use the word independent. So how do you, what is the current state of independent publishers versus independent authors? And what about places like the Independent Publishers Guild? You know, are people like me welcome?
Yeah, I always feel there should be that sort of option, you know, independent publisher, indie author. It's complicated.
Yeah.
This is an industry in flux, and we haven't shaken down the language yet, and that's okay, it's fine. And actually, once it's shaken down, it kind of fossilizes in a way. We don't want that. So I think it's a good thing that there's a bit of flex in there. It's all good. Yes, Independent Publishers Guild. Let's talk to that first. So I'm on the board of the Independent Publishers Guild in the UK. It's an amazing organisation. I love it. It was a real revelation to me, coming out of, you know, years in corporate, to enter that. It's such such a sort of collegiate, collaborative, generous organization, because each of these small publishers sees the people around them as their support network rather than their competitors, which is amazing. It's really good. Mm. And yes, they absolutely welcome indie. I see, I can't, what do I say?
Indie authors.
Indie authors, okay. And back in 2014, which I think is a good bit sooner than the US equivalent, the IBPA did, they set up associate membership for self-published authors to give them access to a lot of the stuff. Basically, if you think of yourself as a business, then that's probably the best way to do it. Am I an author who's just writing and putting it on Amazon, or am I actually a more serious publishing business with, you know, with the infrastructure that, and I want to build around that? I think if that's your approach, then I would thoroughly recommend you come and have a chat to the Independent Publishers Guild, because they've got several different, you know, layers of membership. It's bound to be one that's right for you. And once you're a part of that group, it's an incredibly rich resource. Lots of support. They've got, you know, mentoring. They've got some legal help and stuff. Mm. They have the best stand party at the London Book. Well, I say that. I suspect maybe there's an indie author party.
Oh, there is.
I don't know about
it. Yeah, you don't know about it.
Okay, you could wangle me in there sometime. But it's certainly the best stand party that I know of at the London Book. and yeah, they're also just launching a skills hub, you know, with training. So it's there's lots of good reasons to go and check out the IPG, you know, and they'd be very, very welcoming.
Yeah. And so you think there aren't people who are still worried about that independent term, or people that, you know,
yeah, they probably are, but why would you worry about it? You
know, yeah, exactly. Yeah, who cares? But it's really nice to hear you say about the collaborative idea, because, you know, it's actually, many people still have in their heads a sort of them and us sort of author publisher, you know, but actually it's a continuum, isn't it? It's a continuum.
Absolutely.
From, you know, the hyper sort of business focused CEO of some, yeah, Rupert Murdoch owned company to through the independent publishing, you know, kind of stream into independent authors and on. It's fascinating. And I'm actually looking forward to joining the IPG, and because the Alliance of Independent Authors, of course, is collaborative and helpful, and, you know,
that's
so
right. Ali is another great sort of, you know, organization for people who want to be part of something bigger.
Yeah, exactly. And we're stronger together in all these different ways. So and I'm just going through this weird crossover at the moment. Not crossover, I want to span both sides of the of the side. I'm certainly going to keep writing. I'm not just, you know, not going to move into publishing completely, but I think it's very interesting. Okay, so I did also want to ask you mentioned, like, for your authors, talking to them about marketing, but of course you have your own company and you have to market yourself and everything. So what have you found works best for your authors, but, you know, in terms of book marketing, but also for spreading your own brand?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, the podcast is probably a really good place to start. Shall we talk about that rather than, it feels a bit of cheat because it's not book marketing.
No, it is absolutely just marketing. Yeah.
It's not traditional book marketing, but yes. So I'm the host of the Extraordinary Business Book Club, which you have been a guest on. Mm-hmm. And that was a really special moment for me. I remember inviting you along. You were like, when I know it's going to last, I'll go.
Oh, yeah, I was so mean. I was like, yeah, when you've got enough episodes.
Oh, great, because it gave me such a good goal to aim for. Yeah, and I can imagine that so many podcasts just, you know, crash and burn in the first 10 episodes. Mm. It is. It's hard work, isn't it? But man, it's so much good fun. I hadn't expected it to be so much fun. And honestly, I started up the Extraordinary Business Book Club 70% to force myself to write my own business book. I am a publisher, and I kind of am instinctively a publisher. It's what I love doing. I love working with people. I love curating. I love developing an idea and giving it form and shape and bringing it out into the world. You know, I can write, but it's not actually what I really get off on. I get off on publishing. But it was getting to the point where, yes, I had written other books and I'd written to commission and stuff, and it was fine. But I kind of knew at some point I had to just produce a book and say, yes, oh, this is my book. Yeah. So that was quite a hard thing for me. Mm. And I knew that the only way, because I'm so shallow, the only way it was going to happen was if I actually told people I was going to do it. And I was just shamed into doing it. So that's why I started the podcast. And it has worked. It's worked really well. It's slightly slower than I'd hoped, but it has worked. What I didn't expect was the platform. Well, I suppose I did it. I kind of knew intellectually this would happen, but it was amazing still to see it happen, that the platform buildingness of it for me, and also being able to offer my authors a platform, which has been fantastic. And then to see big publishers coming to me and saying, oh, we have a good author, we think would be fantastic for your show. And for me, keeping that link into, you know, that foothold in traditional publishing alongside working with you know, my new clients and being that independent publisher is quite important. It works really well because many of the people I work with that I coach go on to publish with traditional publishers. So, you know, it's a continuum, as you say, you know, it's a beautiful thing. So that has been fantastic because it means the quality of the conversation that you're having with people is really different. You know, you're approaching absolute rock stars and you're not just sort of saying, oh, hello, I think we're really good, and would you like to read my synopsis? You're actually saying, hey, I've got this really interesting thing that I'm doing in the world. Do you want to be part of it? And that's a completely different conversation, which has you know, I've really enjoyed. And it means that you're there, you're showing up every week, you're talking about what you're doing. You know, I talk about the proposal challenge, the boot camp that I run for graduates of that, talking about the books that I'm publishing. And it's just really authentic. Do you know what? That's the thing for me. You're not putting it out there with nothing behind it. You're there week after week. People get to know you. They get to, you know, they run their life to the sound of your voice. It's really, you know, people have my podcast as their writing ritual. I love that. And then you're just really naturally telling them what you're doing and what you're excited about. And that's, for me, that's the best form of marketing. I think also doing events, you know, I do quite a bit of speaking, probably not as much as you do, but I do quite a bit.
I need to do less. Please do more.
Get out more.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just point them my way. That would be easy. Swap me in. Nobody will notice. We've got long, dark hair. It'll be fine. And that's really good. And I think for my authors particularly, you know, when they get the gigs, suddenly they're selling, you know, vast quantities of books just in one hit, and they're selling them at high margin, of course, because you can give a discount. The people feel like they're getting a great deal, and you're still getting more than you'd get if you sold it through the trade.
Yeah, so, I think for non-fiction authors, speaking is still an incredibly powerful way to build your business, make some income, and sell your book. So, I mean, yeah, I think it makes sense. I think fiction authors doesn't work so well. Although it was really interesting in Australia, I ended up doing an event at a library, and they sold a lot more tickets than expected for an unknown person. And I think partly because, you know, it's talking about how to help people. I think, you know, people want to write books, don't they? So
Absolutely.
Even if, as a fiction author, you can still speak about writing and you'll get more of an audience than if you just turn up and want to talk about your novel.
And that's it. I mean, that's the classic thing about marketing, isn't it? It's okay, what's in it for them? And that's what I mean. It's the same as the book. Who's the target audience? What do they care about? What language are they speaking? You know, how do I get their attention? And you get their attention by providing something that's fun or interesting or educational or important for them to know. And that's where it's got to come from. It's like what's in it for them rather than what's in it for me.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're over for 50 episodes, aren't you now? And I want to encourage people, and maybe you can reflect on this too. Many people are worried, you know, because I've been podcasting since 2009. I'm just old hat at these things. And many people are worried that they're too late. You know, so how has it been doing, you know, a year, I guess you've been going a year now, starting from scratch, you know, how has that gone?
It's gone amazingly. And I would say to somebody, look, if you're dithering about it, you know, if you put it off, then that's just a bit later that you're starting. Why don't you just do it? By this time next year, you'll have been doing it for a year already. I think, you know, I'm going to sound like a broken record now, but I knew really clearly what it was about, who it was for, and what it was going to give them. And so why wouldn't I? You know, why wouldn't I do that? I knew it was going to be fun as well. I think you'd have to be the kind of person that enjoys chatting to people and is curious about how people, you know, how they tick and what makes them write and stuff, in my case. I've really enjoyed it. And maybe I didn't attach too much to it, partly because I kind of had that ulterior motive. It wasn't actually at all important to me that this was to get into, you know, the top 50 on iTunes, which as far as I know, it hasn't done. So that's good. So I'm really actually not that bothered. It is about, you know, being the engine of my own writing, my own kind of talking to people, finding out really invaluable ways that they make their book work with their business. And all the other stuff is kind of jam really on top of that. And so I think if you're doing it because it's intrinsically interesting to you, that's a great place to start from.
Yeah, fantastic. Right, we are almost out of time. But I know. I do want to ask you about, given your innovation history and your early entry into digital, what do you see on the horizon? Like, what do you see in publishing for the next couple of years? Since clearly you're as optimistic as me about many of these things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, well, I don't know if I wouldn't be as optimistic if I was in traditional publishing still, I'll be honest with you. Mm. I think that's, everybody I speak to is in a really, real funk about this. It's not good at all. What do I see coming out? I think audio is fascinating. And, it has been for a couple of years now. But I think with voice assistants coming up really strongly, getting Alexa to read your book and maybe start interacting with it more, I think there's going to be some really interesting stuff coming out with audio and bots and voice assistants. Really interested to see how that will happen. I noticed that Wattpad have just released a new app, Tab. Do you know about this?
Yeah, it's like a chat. Story.
Yeah, it's like a story is told by text message and you tap to load the next message up. And that sense of, using and kind of co-opting the new forms of communication around us to tell stories. And that, I mean, it's actually minimal interactivity. All you're doing is tapping a screen. But, the impression you're left with is that you're kind of eavesdropping on a conversation. I think that's fascinating. So those different modes of telling stories. And what's going to happen, of course, is Wattpad release it and then their user base, who are incredibly imaginative and inventive, will take it and run with it and do things that we hadn't even thought about. So I think that's exciting. I'm also, I guess this is part of my background, but I'm really interested to see what will happen with open access. So, OA has been a thing, but it hasn't been a thing that's extended far beyond the academy yet. So just in case people aren't aware, open access is basically the people who are doing the research have a fund which they use to pay the publisher. It's a kind of a publishing services thing. It's not dissimilar to what I do. And they publish it and it's made available freely rather than being, buried behind a paywall of a journal subscription. Now, it may be available. Most of the time it's impenetrable still because it's written by academics for academics. But there's this incredibly rich, cutting edge research that's suddenly available to everybody. And you've got those big platforms like Biomed Central and PLOS One, and there's the big journals. But at the moment, there's very little crossover down, very little trickle down. But I think there's a whole class of people who are intellectually curious, who may be running businesses and want some research, who citizen scientists, putting decent search mechanisms at the very least on that content. So I think there's some really interesting stuff to come out of that as well.
Cool. That is awesome. And you did mention your book. When can we expect that book and what is it about?
That's a very good question. No, I took a leaf out of your book, actually. I booked the editor for the end of March.
Marvellous.
I know. So it's only for the first section. I'm delivering by sections. The book is called This Book Means Business. Mm-hmm. 99 Brilliant Ideas for Writing a Business Building Book.
Nice title.
You like that? Okay. Good. And I did the full Guy Kawasaki, and you'll have to listen to my podcast to work out what that means. Basically, I've put, and it's like there now, I'm not quite sure when this is going out, but the whole table of contents is up online as a Google Doc.
I checked it.
Leave some comments, please. I haven't seen that. So that was fantastic. That felt, I can't tell you the fear of pressing, go live on that. But and it's interesting, nobody's actually dared leave a comment on it, but I've had loads of people email me with comments. It's not how it's supposed to work, people. This is a collaborative exercise.
I actually thought it was very comprehensive. I didn't have anything to add.
Well, that's good to hear. It was supposed to be the whole thing, but I've cut it. Again, from following your advice when we were talking, but a few people have said, look, just it doesn't have to be very long. Mm. So this is all about ways in which you can use the book to build your business as you write. And then the next one is going to be, ways to build your business once you have the book in your hand. And it's more about the sort of promotion and stuff. So it's, clever tricks and ways of actually kind of, making the most value out of your book. Even while it's just a sort of twinkle in your eye, the various things that you can do to help build your profile, to get more content, to test out the content, to build your launch team, all that kind of good stuff.
Sounds good. So it's with the editor target in March. Yes, target date is
September.
September. Fantastic. Well, we'll definitely keep an eye out for that. So where can people find you and the podcast and the potential book and all the other books you work on online?
The forthcoming book, please. my website's just alisonjones.com, www.alisonjones.com. And you can see Practical Inspiration books on there as well. I'm actually right in the middle of the process of building the Practical Inspiration website. So by the time this goes out, you may be seeing a link to that rather than seeing the books on there. And the podcast is at www.extraordinarybusinessbooks.com, and there's also an Extraordinary Business Books Club Facebook group, which is you're very welcome to join. And please do tweet me at Books to the Sky on Twitter, because that's where I am pretty much every second of every day.
You and me both. Right. So thank you so much for your time, Alison. That was great.
Oh, fantastic to talk to you, Joanna. Bye-bye.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Alison. And if you're interested in business books, check out her podcast, The Extraordinary Business Book Club, at extraordinarybusinessbooks.com. And next week, I've got an interview with thriller author Dean Crawford on how to make $1 million with your book. So he's got a new nonfiction book out on that topic. But it's not quite what you would expect, because Dean is British and quite softly spoken. And the million has been made over a number of years, not in a big spike. So it's very different to some of the hype you might hear from other sources. And I actually really like that approach, because we can all make $1 million with our books. It just might take a number of years. And so we talk about that. And also, Dean was traditionally published back in the heyday of super big advances. So you'd think he would be very pro-traditional, but he is now quite fiercely indie. So it's really interesting to hear his perspective. So happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes, available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.